Sean, we're back a little earlier this week because of Thanksgiving, but I think it's an appropriate time to ask you, are you as good right now as William Nylander must feel after his trip to Stockholm?
Dude, I've never been that good. First of all, I don't have the style that William Nylander has. And then second of all, I've never had a week quite like that. I go home to Rhode Island, stuff like that doesn't happen.
No, unfortunately it doesn't. What a week. I mean, my goodness. And the capper, the goal, the rush, the goal to win it Sunday. Look, the Global Series was a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching it. Daytime hockey, 8 a.m. Eastern time hockey. It was an enjoyable watch. Games that mattered. Teams that were really pushing and need to win. But nobody had a better time and nobody had a bigger week than this guy. William Nylander, 5 points in the two games. The Toronto Maple Leafs come home with a 4-game winning streak. Nylander's rocking and rolling. He's got points in 17 straight games to start this season. You saw the reactions from his family, from his father, Michael Nylander, was great. You covered Michael Nylander. I covered Michael Nylander a little bit. And to watch his reactions about, especially after the overtime goal the other day, Sunday, to the reaction that Michael Nylander and his family had was great. But listen, Sean, let's talk about William Nylander here in a bigger picture. It's a great week in Stockholm, but this guy has got to get paid. And right now, is he the favorite? Or he's got to be at least within the top five for the Hart Trophy at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely in the conversation. Look, he's going to get paid. You want to talk about a contract year, he's having one. To me, the most amazing part about it is you see a lot of players go home, right, at different points, whether it's the Global Series or, you know, Hockeyville or whatever it is. You know, there's things that are designed to put players in their hometowns. And a lot of times the moment's too big, and it's for a variety of reasons. If you look at the list of what William Nylander was asked to do this week in Sweden, it's ridiculous, right? Talk shows, clinics, the whole thing, right? Media, Swedish media, North American media, whatever it is, his time was so accounted for. And then he had to take care of his teammates, right? Because that's part of the unwritten rule of this is,
right,
you go to your hometown, your home country, all of a sudden you're doing all the dinner reservations, you're having the nights out with the team, which the players love, but it's a huge commitment. And a lot of times it weighs down a player and they don't quite deliver what they hope to deliver. That was not William Nylander. He delivered beyond what anybody could imagine. And for me, you know, doing the game on Sunday and listening to some of the quotes as they came in to put into the game story, like the common thread among all these guys was they weren't surprised at all, right? Like to me, Sheldon Keefe, the coach of the Maple Leafs, said it best. Like, he has this swagger now where he just believes there's nothing he can't do. And when a player has that swagger, watch out. Especially when he's as skilled as William Nylander.
Yeah, but that's what points in 17 straight games will do. That's what 7 multi-point games so far this season will do for a player. He's got the swagger because he's playing the best I've seen him play in the National Hockey League. He's had good stretches, but he hasn't had a stretch this good for this long. And you can make the case. I mean, listen, right now he's the best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And maybe in the big picture, he is the best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs, though I wouldn't go that far. Okay.
You know, there's a guy on the Maple Leafs right now that has 14 goals, right?
Right, right. I'm saying I wouldn't go that far. But I think
you said
right
he's
now,
the best player on the Maple Leafs
right
now.
Yeah, right now he is. Right now he is because he's creating, he's playmaking, he's delivering production, he's scoring in the clutch, he's doing all those things, and he's putting the team on his back in a week like this. 100% he's the best player on the Maple Leafs right now. Is he the best player on the team big picture? I still think that's Austin Matthews. Okay, I do. He does so much. We can go down the list of everything that Austin Matthews does. Matthews is scoring goals. He also was red hot in scoring goals at the start of the season. He's cooled off a little bit, which is a market correction. We knew was going to happen. William Nylander has just continued to produce, just continued to get the job done on a nightly basis. And you're right. He goes to Stockholm. It's a big moment. A lot of times it's bigger than the player. Well, it is bigger than the player, but he made this moment, as big as it was, bigger because he was the one that was in the starring role throughout the whole thing. He's got to come back with that swagger. He's got to continue on with it. The Maple Leafs have to continue on with the swagger that they showed in coming back and in playing the way they did there in Stockholm too. But William Nylander's leading the way right now.
Well, we're done with this topic. It was a good conversation.
Okay.
I don't think he's the best player on the team right now, but you've told me I'm wrong, so we'll move on.
It's a good time, then, to say that Amelie Benjamin's going to be joining us, all right? our colleague from Boston, she's our staff writer up in Boston. Amelie Benjamin's going to be joining us. A lot of news, obviously, out of Boston. A great team with some tough news this weekend on Milan Lucic, so we're going to be discussing that with her. If we're done with the William Nylander topic, and I won the argument, if it was even an argument.
I do want to discuss one other thing about Sweden, though.
Okay, we can do that, but the William Nylander argument's over. I won.
It's over. You told me it's over. No, okay, you didn't win it. You just ended it. You said there was no argument. Who am I to argue with you, Dan?
Exactly. What else?
Yeah. I don't know if you saw it, but while the boys were over there in Sweden, one of the crazy things that they do, because they do all kinds of crazy stuff while they're over there, there was a Swedish meatball tasting competition, a bunch of other stuff. Good friend of NHL.com, Johan Haig from A Modern Marth, taught some of the boys how to scream. Taught Nick Foligno how to scream. It is one of the funniest things. Johan Haig's a death metal singer, and that's what he does for a living. But he gave screaming lessons, so when these guys chirp on the ice, him and a couple other players are going to have a hidden talent. If you can see the videos, they are fantastic.
It's really funny. I did see it. It's another little fun thing that they do over there. You incorporate a lot of different things. That is fun. I would go watch those videos. They are a lot of fun, and maybe they will get an advantage. Maybe the screaming will become an advantage, or just an annoyance that becomes an advantage. Don't you think it could be that too?
Sure. Ryan Reeves was supposed to do it. That's the one I would have liked to have seen.
He already screams enough on the ice, I think. All right. So listen, the Global Series games were a lot of fun. William Nylander, the star of the show, no question about it. A couple of minutes, we'll be joined by Amelie Benjamin, our colleague up in Boston, talk all about the Bruins and what's going on with them. But if we're going to talk William Nylander and the season and the start of the season that he's having, Sean, we have to talk about Artemi Panarin as well, because they're kind of similar in a way. Panarin's got points in 15 straight games to start the season. It's 17 for Nylander. Panarin right now is just producing at a level that listen, he's been a terrific player for a long time. He had a great year with the Rangers. He's had several great years with the Rangers. This is the best I've seen him play with the Rangers. It's the best I've seen Nylander play with the Maple Leafs. The Rangers are winning. They're 12-2-1. They play Dallas tonight, Monday night. They're 10-0-1 in their past 11 games. Panarin's got 26 points. And one of the key things with this and Artemi Panarin, who also, by the way, should be in the Hart Trophy conversation, if you ask me, is how the chemistry he's found with Alexi Lafreniere. And typically that doesn't happen maybe it does at times, but you don't often see that chemistry between two wingers. It's typically between a centerman and a winger, right? But it doesn't matter at this point who's played between them. It was Filip Hedl. He got hurt. Now it's Vincent Trocheck. And those two haven't skipped a beat. And Lafreniere's got 7 goals. He's off to a great start. He got moved to the right wing, and now he's proving that he's a top 6 guy in the right wing spot. And a big part of that is Panarin, with the way he's playing, distributing and looking to shoot more. That's the other thing with Artemi Panarin, looking to shoot more. So my point is, if we're going to talk about Nylander, and we should, I think we also have to be talking about Artemi Panarin in the same breath.
Yeah, well, he's the best player on the Rangers, right?
Igor Shesterkin's their best player. Can't say that about the Maple Leafs goaltending.
Well, I don't think you could say that about Igor Shesterkin right now either, that he's the best player on the Rangers.
Because who is?
The guy we're talking about.
All right. Listen, I'm not going to argue, but I do think Shesterkin was out of the lineup, and the Rangers were still winning. Panarin was still producing. Adam Fox has been out of the lineup. He's skating again. He can't come back until November 29th. The Rangers are still, Panarin's still producing. The Rangers are still winning. So you know what? You win this one.
Yay. Good for me. But yeah, no, they're both in the conversation. You know, it's early. We're going to be doing our trophy trackers. I'm actually adding up the numbers around this podcast so I don't have to work on Thanksgiving. And, you know, and the MVP vote is wide open, and it's always going to be, right? When you look at the first 20, 21 games of a season, because while it's a big enough sample size where teams should be worried or players should be happy or sad about where they're at, there's still a lot of runway left. There's nothing crazier, by the way, than the first quarter trophy tracker for the coach. There'll be 26 coaches that'll get at least one vote. I almost guarantee it.
What's interesting about our trophy trackers this first quarter of this season is I'm going to guess, I don't know, I haven't seen it, you probably aren't getting too many votes for the Hart Trophy for Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl.
No, not so far. And rightfully so. I mean, there's some reputation living, right, that happens, but I don't think either one of them can make an argument for it right now. The other thing, you know, that's happening is clearly Connor Bedard is the runaway for Rookie of the Year, but I also don't think that's as given as it should be. There's some pretty good rookies in this league this year.
Yeah, there are some good rookies, and I'm also, I mean, that the conversation about Bedard is going to be very interesting as it gets to the midway point of the season and the three-quarter mark of the season. Like, you're already seeing a little bit of his production wane a little bit, right? Him going through a little bit of a slump, not shooting as much. So that one's going to be interesting. It's going to be more wide open, I think, throughout the season this year. Like last year, I know we had debates about it, but for the most part, it was pretty much assumed that Connor McDavid was running away with the Hart Trophy. Whether you agree or disagree, it was the general consensus was that. And I say that because you didn't agree at the time, but it was pretty much assumed that he was running away with it. It's not. Nobody's really running away with it right now with the trophies that we're talking about, as we're talking a quarter of the way through the season, almost a quarter of the way through the season. Though I will say that as I was doing my voting, I do believe that I had Panarin in my Hart Trophy conversation. I think I had William Nylander in there as well, but I had a Vancouver Canucks player, and we talked to Kevin Woodley about this a little bit last week when we did our episode, our correspondent in Vancouver. I had Elias Pettersson as the Hart. I had Quinn Hughes as the Norris. I had Rick Tocchet as the Jack Adams. And I think, I had Thatcher Demko as the Vezina. So I had almost a clean sweep for Canucks in my trophy tracker votes for the quarter mark. I don't think I've ever done that, to be honest. And I would venture to guess it won't be like that at the midway when we do it again at the halfway point of the season.
No, I don't imagine it will. And you did have Connor Bedard as your top rookie.
I did.
And the one thing, whether he's quote-unquote slumping or not, I just had to do something for his – we do a weekly update on where he is and where he stacks up against other number ones and what's coming up and all those things that go with being a generational player. That guy has 37.5% of Chicago's offense this year. As a rookie, that's nutters.
As a rookie, well, he's that good, number one. I mean, that actually doesn't surprise me in the least, because he's getting so much ice time. He's playing in all kinds of offensive zone situations, and he's got the best skill on the team. So why would that surprise you?
Because that's a huge number. I don't think Nylander or Panarin have it. So let's put him in the MVP conversation.
Can't do that.
Why?
Well, it goes back to this is a whole other argument, so let's cap it quick here. But you can't do that because their team's not winning. He's not driving it to wins. The MVP's got to drive to some wins here. So I don't know. I mean, listen, maybe he will be by some point. Who knows? But it's an interesting where those trophy trackers, we're doing them now. They're next week, right? Trophy stories are going to be coming out after Thanksgiving. They're always a fun read. They're interesting to see where things kind of stack up at the quarter mark of the season. It's amazing that we're almost at the quarter mark. And Sean, we're going to get to Amelie here in a second. What's interesting, and I want, as we get to Amelie, I want to ask you this, though. So I struggled with this, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I struggled with this with the Bruins, who we're going to talk about with Amelie, in the trophy tracker voting. Their goaltending has been outstanding. Linus Ullmark, right? I mean, Jeremy Swayman, they've been outstanding goaltending. But it's split almost down the middle. I didn't put either one of them in my Vezina vote because I thought to myself, if I have one, how do I not have the other, right? So they didn't. It was like a split vote, and they both didn't get in into my Vezina vote. So do you agree with that? Am I wrong on there? I don't know. I'm kind of torn. Sometimes you guide me, so guide me.
I know for a fact that you've put McDavid and Draisaitl together in the Hart Trophy.
I have. But it's different when it's goaltending, though.
Why?
Because the two, the Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid are both skaters. They're not always on the ice at the same time. They're driving it in a different way at times, or they're driving it together and both producing, whether it's even off of each other or it's separate on separate lines, and yet you're still getting the same level of high-end production and offense that they're driving all the way through without sacrificing too much, right? When it's goaltending, we're talking about you get the start, you're in net, and that's it. Like they're sharing the net. They're sharing time. Draisaitl and McDavid are not always sharing time. They're on the ice at separate times and still doing those things. So that's why it was different for me for goaltending.
Well, they are sharing the time. They're sharing whatever percentage of the minutes that the forwards get. They get some. Other people get some. It's the same thing for goalies. As a goalie, you play when you're told to play. If you win every game you're told to play, how can you not be one of the best goalies in the league? Because your coach plays another goalie? Well, that's downright silly. So you're telling me if Swayman went 38-3-1 and Allmark went 32-4-1, that you wouldn't put either one of them in your vote because they split?
This is why I ask you the question. Sometimes I need the guidance. All
this
right.
is why I'm giving you the answer. I've never understood with the goalie thing. The goalie has no say, unless you're Marty Brodeur. The goalie has no say over when he plays, especially in today's game. The goalie has absolutely no say in when he plays. There's all kinds of metrics about back-to-backs. There's all kinds of metrics about travel. And look at some of the teams that we thought were going to be really good that are being derailed by goalie situations. Edmonton, Carolina, Toronto, to a degree, right?
Minnesota.
They're all sort of being derailed by not having two good goalies. Boston has two good goalies, and Jim Montgomery decides when they play. And every time he taps a guy on the shoulder and says, go out there and play, what does that goalie do? He wins. What else does he do? He gives up less than two goals. Like, the Bruins are not winning 7-5 games like the Edmonton Oilers. They're two of the most elite goalies in the league.
That's fair. All right, it's fair. I think it's also a good question. Let's ask it to Emily Benjamin. We're going to talk to her about the Bruins. They're 13-1-2, but there's so much else going on with them as well. Here's our conversation with Emily. Emily, thanks for joining us. There's so much to get to, obviously, so much positive to get to with the Bruins and the start that they're having of the season, but we do need to start with Milan Lucic. And what we know is that he's on an indefinite leave from the team. There's an arraignment Tuesday in Boston. But I wanted to ask you more about the impact that this whole situation involving Lucic, who's a well-known figure within that team and well-liked as far as I can tell, the impact that has on the team. I mean, Jim Montgomery the other day said it's not a normal day. They went out and won anyway, but it's not a normal day and it's not a normal time. So just what's the vibe? What do you think the vibe is around that room right now with the whole situation involving Lucic and the impact it has on the team?
You're right. This is a player who wasn't playing. He hasn't been on the ice since October 21st, but there is an impact. This is a guy who, say, Captain Brad Marchand has known for a long time. They were drafted by the Bruins in the same draft. And the message from the Bruins really has been, we are here to focus on our job. We are professionals. That's where we're going to put our mindsets. But at the same time, we are here to support the Lucic family. And that's really the message that has been out there is, we are here to support Brittany, his wife, the kids, and Lucic himself. We are here to provide what we can and see how the process plays out. And they turned certainly their focus back to the ice on Saturday, getting a really good win against the Montreal Canadiens, maybe one of their most complete efforts of the season. And I think that's the mindset that they're going to take going forward as they head, you know, on this Florida road trip and beyond.
And when you look at the Bruins, I mean, we had this conversation preseason, you know, how much are they going to backslide? They're losing, you know, X amount of points in Bergeron and Krejci, and they're losing all this leadership, and they're losing everything. They're better right now than they were last year. How?
Who needs Patrice Bergeron? I think clearly we all see
overrated.
He was dragging this team down over the past, you know, 19 years. No, this really has started with the goaltenders. And that is a testament to them that this is not the Bruins defense that's propping them up, that this truly is us seeing what Jeremy Swayman is growing into, seeing what Linus Ullmark can be. He has been so comfortable in his two seasons in Boston, and really what that relationship can do for both players who are both sacrificing to enable the team to be this good.
It's like she knew, Sean. Like she knew the segue that we needed, and she just nailed it because she went to the goaltending. So what you don't know, Emily, is Sean and I were just having a debate about this, that he won, I will say, okay? The goaltending as it comes to trophy trackers. And we're doing our trophy tracker votes right now, and I struggled with the Bruins because Ullmark's having a great season, Swayman's having a great season, yet I didn't put either one of them in my top five. Because it's almost like they split one vote and I didn't know what to do. So I didn't put either one of them in thinking, well, you know, if one of them had taken the edge, maybe that guy would get it. And his point was, who cares? They don't control when they play. Whenever they're asked to play, they go in and they win and they play great. And they don't give up five goals. They give up two. So where do you lie on this debate with the trophy trackers and the Boston Bruins goaltending?
Dan may recall that I sent a message to our NHL.com group text chain that said that this is breaking my brain. It doesn't take a lot to do that these days, but where I landed was that I had Jeremy Swayman on. I did not have Linus Ullmark on. Jeremy Swayman, to me, has been the better of the two. And like Sean said, he doesn't control that he has only been in net half of the games. And this seems to be the rotation that they are going to use for the foreseeable future, that it is going to be one, then the other, you know, in perpetuity as far as Jim Montgomery is looking at it. What was really interesting the other day was that he said that this is something that he would be open to continuing into the playoffs, which, as you may recall, was kind of maybe a large reason why they did not make it to the second round last season. He did not do that. They stuck with Linus Ullmark until game seven when they finally put Jeremy Swayman in. So it looks like they're reevaluating it, learning from past experiences. But the short answer is Jeremy Swayman was in my trophy tracker and Linus Ullmark was not.
I think that's really interesting. Do you think that Jim Montgomery learned from last year? Like, A, he's talking about it 20 games into the season that, oh, when we get to the playoffs, we're going to go one for one possibly, whereas it wasn't even a consideration last year. I know he's a very reflective guy. I know he took it very hard that they lost and put a lot of the blame at his feet. Do you think in the conversations you've had with him that this is a realization that he's come to, that the common knowledge, so to speak, may not be right?
You know, I think, to be fair, he was asked specifically about this. I don't think it's something that he wanted to talk about 20 games into the season. But I think it's something that he is open to. I think it's something that, he will have a lot of conversations with goaltending coach Bob Asenza about as they head down the stretch and into the playoffs. And I think it's something where they definitely saw that was something that they could have done better last season. And if this is the way that their goaltenders thrive, if this is the way that they perform best, I think they're open to it. I mean, you know, if one goaltender gets super hot, I don't know that they're going to take that guy out. But that wasn't the case, you'll recall, last season. Ullmark wasn't performing at his best. And so there was an opening, say, in game five or game six, mm-hmm. for Swayman to take the net, to relieve some pressure off Ullmark, to put Swayman sort of back in that rotation, get him reps, whether he won or not. And I think that it is just something that where they may not have been open to it last season, but I think they will be this season.
Well, and I never understood why they weren't in the first place, because like you said, if this is the way the goaltenders thrive, then why not continue? Why change what you've done successfully throughout the entire season when you get into the playoffs? Like, it seems like a crazy thing to do. If it's worked for you for the entire 82 game season, why then would it not work for you in a 7-game playoff series that you need to win to get another 7-game playoff series? So it is interesting. It's an interesting perspective, but beyond the goaltending, it's how the Bruins are playing in front of the goalies too. That is just remarkable. I mean, the way that you describe it better, that you could probably describe it better because you see them live a heck of a lot more than I would see them live. What are they doing so well in front of the goalies to not make the goalies look good, but to help make the goalies look even better than maybe they even are.
I mean, everything. There has been, it really has been interesting to watch sort of how they have attacked this season, especially down the middle. We have seen better play from Pavel Zacha than we have seen before. He is really coming into his own as a center. They have gotten incredible bumps from these rookies who have come in unexpectedly in Matthew Poitras, in John Beecher, even in Mason Lowry. I mean, guys that they did not expect to necessarily make that jump this season. They have gotten really all they could have asked for and more from them. So I think it's really just sort of a team way of looking at things, of saying we don't have these two stars that we had sort of anchoring us for so long. So we are going to all make the effort. We are going to all bring it up a notch, and they have. I think you can see some of the defensemen are really rounding into form when you look at Charlie McAvoy, some of the offensive strides he's made this season. Hampus Lindholm is coming on. He's been a little slow in that department, but he's coming on. It really is sort of an A to Z. Everyone is performing.
So first of all, Pavel Zacha has been very good as a first-line center. I encourage everybody to go and Google Emily Benjamin and Pavel Zacha and read about why he was bred to play hockey. It's one of the best stories Emily's written since she's been here. Really fantastic. But is it enough? That's always going to be the question. Look, they have a 9-point lead right now in the division. It doesn't mean they're going to win the division, but barring a collapse that's almost unforeseeable, we're talking playoffs already for the Bruins. Is Pavel Zacha and a cast of unknowns good enough in the playoffs when you look at the center depth in the East?
You know, I would say David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand can make pretty much any center look good. So I think you have some of the supporting pieces. You have guys who are performing better than anticipated. I don't think any of us thought that James Van Riemsdyk would come in and have 5 goals already. I think he had 12 last season. They have guys who they're sort of slotting into the right places. You know, they were looking for a guy who maybe had that net front presence. JVR comes in. He can be that guy for them. I think they're being very smart about where they put guys, the mix of lines that they're trying, that they're sort of going through. I think they're taking an approach that says, we have been able to get so many points early in the season that we have the luxury of being able to make this work with a bunch of different combinations and figure out what suits them best.
You didn't answer my question, so I'm going to make it even more blunt. We get to the trade deadline. The Boston Bruins have the ultimate chip. They have 2 1A goaltenders. They only need one. Getting rid of one solves a lot of their problems. Is their need at center so dire that that's a move that you would think about making as the Boston GM?
I have covered Don Sweeney long enough to know that he will be making those phone calls. But to me, if you get rid of one of those goaltenders, does it work as well? Is Swayman ready to step up, for example, and be your goaltender of the present, not just goaltender of the future? Is he a goaltender who can take on all those starts that you're going to have going down the stretch and into the playoffs? If we just talked about the fact that those two goaltenders are what is really driving this Boston Bruins team, do you upset that balance? I mean, I know it's something that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely are going to look at and think about. I mean, could they use another center? 100%, they could. But do you mess up what you have going if, for example, you trade one of those goalies? I think it's going to be a really important question that they're going to spend a lot of time thinking about.
And they have chemistry together, right? I mean, that these two guys really like each other. You see the hugs after wins and all that, right? Like, there is something to be said for upsetting that balance as well that you have. And, oh, we can always say, like, what if one of them gets hurt? I mean, listen, we don't know that, right? But we do know that if you move one away, you're putting another one in a position that he has not been in and succeeded in ever, right? I mean, like, that's the difference. And the other thing I'll add to that is I don't know that they would need to trade one of the goalies. I don't think it takes that at the trade deadline to get guys, especially if it's somebody on an expiring contract to help you down the middle. What are the odds that they're going to get a number one center coming to them at the deadline? It's unlikely. I mean, there's some guys who might be available. Names aren't coming to my mind right now that could be available, but does it take giving up a guy who could be in the Vezina Trophy conversation, because both of them could still be in that Vezina Trophy conversation come early March. The deadline's March 8th. I don't think it does. I don't think that's where we're at now with the trade deadline. So I think it's definitely phone calls Don Sweeney's probably going to be having. But I don't know, Emily, that he would have to even go that length to do it.
I think they also have a lot more to learn about these rookies. You know, you have seen them for 20 games. That's not really enough of a sample size to know what they are really going to be. That's a lot to put on them now. So, you know, how good does Patrick continue to be as the season goes on? How good does John Beecher continue to be as the season goes on? And do you see continued growth from Coyle and Zaka such that they think they can continue to handle those spots? Again, it's going to be a question that they have. And I think Dan may not be wrong that you may not need to trade your goalies to get, or a goalie to get an upgrade in that position. But I think you need more data. I think you're not there. You're not ready to make that decision quite yet. Fortunately, you don't have to. The trade deadline's at least a little ways away.
So in your opinion, Black Friday is this week. Everybody loves to shop on Black Friday. What do the Bruins need? They're the best team in hockey right now. What do they need?
I mean, the obvious answer is a center, but I don't know. Like, I think right now, you know what, honestly, you know what they need? It's adversity. This is a team that has had zero adversity under Jim Montgomery. Since he was hired, they have had zero adversity in the regular season. And by the time they had it in the playoffs, it was too late. So I think, honestly, that's what you need them to go through. You need them to go through a little bit of a losing streak. You need them to see what they can be when everything is not going perfectly. You need to see what changes you can make that turn the team around. What, adjustments that you need to have in the lines or in the D pairings. I think that is what, if you could buy that, that's what this team needs. And Montgomery spoke to that a little bit, that he just hasn't had that yet. And it's strange.
Yeah, and let's not trivialize what's going on with Milan Lucic and call that adversity for what you're talking about for the team. That's not what you mean. You mean
no,
struggles.
I mean yeah. Losing. I mean a few yeah. injuries. I mean a little bit of a three-game losing streak. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about them not having everything just kind of clicking on the ice.
And it's interesting that you say that too, because I think of a team like Vegas is going through that now, right? I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights have off to a terrific start, just like the Bruins, but they've hit a little bit of that. They were coming off a Stanley Cup win, so obviously a little different than Boston losing in the first round, but they've hit a little bit of that now. We aren't questioning Vegas because we've seen them go through it and come out the other side with rings on their fingers. Is that maybe something I wonder if we would question Boston if it hit them a little bit, or is their culture and what they have going and the leadership too great for us to even think that if they do go in that adversity, that they wouldn't struggle coming out of it, to come out of it?
I think no team's culture is that great that you can't question a little bit. But yeah, I think that they have certainly a track record of saying we can figure these things out, but they need to know. They need to know what happens to them. Do they crumble? Does it snowball? What happens? Can they get out of it quickly? They don't know that yet. And they didn't see it last season, and they haven't seen it this season. And so that's something that all teams need to go through. I mean, you saw how it galvanized the Florida Panthers last year. They went through a heck of a lot of adversity, and that proved important when they got into a series that became really difficult. They ended up coming out on top. So I think for the Bruins, that's something that they need to see. It's not really something you wish for as a team, but at the same time, it's important.
No, I don't know if there's anything more adverse than blowing the greatest season in the history of hockey. I think those mental scars will serve this team well. You mentioned the Florida Panthers, and I'm curious because once the Bruins went out, you covered a lot of Panthers all the way through the Stanley Cup Finals. Are you surprised that they're where they're at?
Yes. I am. I thought it was going to be so hard to come back from the defensive injuries that they had. I mean, it really, at losing Rad Kaguta, so you really lost most of your defensive presence and identity from last season. I thought they were going to crumble, but at this point, I'm not going to look past the Florida Panthers anymore, as Matthew Tkachuk has told us repeatedly not to do. Maybe I've learned something.
Yeah, well, they make the division even better. It's a loaded division, and that's why I think Sean was saying it's not a lock that the Bruins win it. But it's pretty darn close, and they're certainly a playoff team at this point. Emily, thanks so much for joining us and having the Bruins conversation with the little Panthers thrown in there.
Thanks so much, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Yes, you happy too. Thanksgiving to you too. Great stuff there with Emily. Always interesting to hear her opinion. I liked her opinion on the goalies. She was different than our opinion on the Bruins goalies. You said both. I said none. She said one. So there you go. It was a little bit of a mix. Sean, there's other things going on in the hockey world. The Columbus Blue Jackets. Patrick Laine scratched. The Blue Jackets can't win. What's going on in Columbus? And is this team going to be able to come out of this? I mean, Sean, they're 1-9-4 in their last 14 games. They started 3-2. It was promising. They're 1-9-4 in their last 14 games, and they're 0-7-2 in their last 9. And I mean, they can't score on the power play. Laine's getting scratched. What's going on here?
I think you covered it all. You don't like to leave a lot of meat on the bones, buddy.
But I'm giving you you now can hit on all of that. As I just mentioned the stats, now you get to go where you want to go with them.
Look, I just think that things aren't working. You've already had Gaudreau scratched, and now Patrick Laine scratched. I think it's well-earned. You're trying to put Patrick Laine at center, something he said he's willing to do. Like, I think Patrick gets a bad rap, right? He's on his second city. Things aren't working out. People are like, maybe it's time to move on. I remember covering this kid ever since his draft year, and there is a confidence there that when it disappears, we were talking about swagger a couple of minutes ago with William Nylander, right? Like, Patrick Laine has that swagger. He doesn't have it now. If you watch him play the last couple of games, he can't even receive a pass. So good on the coach to put him in the press box and say, think about your game and work on your game and come back and give me what I expect from you. But he needs to be better. The whole team needs to be better. Like, it doesn't fall on one guy. It doesn't fall on the coach. Like, this is your team. Accept it and be better.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know why they're trying to jam him in at center. Like, why can't this guy just be a scoring winger? Like, why can't he just be a guy who is a streaky scoring winger? Because he could score 50. He could score 30 one year. He could score 50 the next. That's who he is. Why are we trying to jam him in at center? Change the way he plays. Change the position he plays. It doesn't make sense. And nor does scratching him. Makes no sense. You've got
scratching
a player
him
who's
makes
got
perfect sense.
No. You got a player with no confidence, and you're going to say you're not good enough to play? That doesn't help him. Put him back in the position where he's most comfortable. That's how you help him.
Okay, Coach Rosen.
That's what we're here for. All right. Blue Jackets, check that one off the list. Minnesota Wild, another one, struggling. They were in Sweden. Bill Price, our fearless leader, even your fearless leader at times, he was there. He wrote about them coming out of the Global Series, and they were okay with how they played. They liked their game. They felt they found their identity, the defensive game, and all of that. They still lost both games. They can't score. Sean, this just looks like a team that like needs some type of spark. They're just middling around. They're a middle of the pack team. I don't know where that spark is coming from. Even Kaprizov doesn't have the spark that he had last year.
Well, we just talked about streaky, right? Like, that's what goal scorers do. They're streaky. Alex Ovechkin only has 5 goals. Like, that's going to happen. He needs help. I don't know why they would be happy with their game. Look, I will say on Sunday they fell down 3-1 on a back-to-back night against arguably one of the best teams in the league, and they came back and they tied it, and they forced overtime, and then they got beat on an unbelievable individual effort. Like, there's nothing you can do but shake your head at that. I will tell you, though, if I'm that team, I'm really, really nervous about Billy Guerin, their GM,
mm-hmm.
reaching his boiling point in more ways than one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been around him as a player. He'll take the paint off the walls. He's not afraid to do it as a manager. The other thing, and he's already started to do it with a little bit here and there, trimming, sending guys along, saying, that's it. I don't need you anymore. I'm going to bring in somebody new. That's just been a touch. They go a little bit longer. It's going to be much more radical, I think.
I agree with you. Here's a problem, though. You mentioned it, that they were down in the game against Toronto. And they came back. They've been down a lot, right? I mean, they have been trailing. They've played 17 games. They've trailed going into the third period in 11 of those games. You're playing catch up too much. you're never going to get ahead, right? I mean, they're 2-7-2 in those games because when teams trail going into the third period in this league, they probably win 20% of the time, right? Maybe you get a point out of the game 22%. I don't have the numbers. I'm just going off the top of my head. I know it doesn't happen very often. I'm making them up. I know it doesn't happen very often. But the thing is, like, you're playing catch up too much. That's got to be a thing. Billy Guerin's got to be up in the press box or in his booth and wherever he is, either at XL Energy Center on the road or in Stockholm, and going, why are we trailing again? We're trailing again. And here's the other thing. This team was built on great defense and great goaltending last year. They're not getting either one of those things. If the defense is suffering, we know the goaltending suffers, but you need your goalies to bail you out sometimes, and they're not really doing it.
No, and that's a huge problem. Look, Marc-Andre Fleury's 3 wins away from passing or tying Patrick Waugh as the second winningest goalie. It feels like he's been there for a month, right? He can't get a win, and you thought maybe it was going to come yesterday, but, you know, they lose on an unbelievable play in overtime. But they scored first, and they kind of had Toronto. They started to apply the pressure, and then they let up, and Toronto took over that game, and then Minnesota took over in the second and the third period, outshot them wildly, but could not generate quality chances. And that's been their biggest issue. It's not that they're not getting shots. They're just not generating high quality chances.
All right, 2 more topics real quick before we hit the Thanksgiving break for ourselves here, as hopefully everybody's listening through Thanksgiving on this one. One, the Vegas Golden Knights. Is there any reason to be concerned about the Vegas Golden Knights? If you look at the numbers, they were really good at the start of the season, obviously, and they were, I think it was a plus 23 in goal differential, and they were unstoppable the last 7 games. It's a minus. The power play is not as good as the PK. It's not as good. Is this just a team that has just hit a little bit of a slide? I think it's just a team that hit a little bit of a slide. Looks like the puck's just bouncing off their stick a little bit, and they'll find their way.
I have absolutely no concerns about the Vegas Golden Knights. None.
Perfect. Good answer. Last topic. Patrick Kane. Where does he sign?
Florida Panthers. If you want me to pick Florida Panthers.
All right. There you go. I like to pick. I was going Buffalo Sabres. I think they're both in the mix for him. So there you go.
They may be. Before we get out of here, quick plug. Couple of quick plugs. One, our colleague Dave Stubbs, working over Hall of Fame weekend while we goofed off, got a 6-hour exclusive with with Carey Price, turned it into a 2-part story. The first part ran Sunday, the second part runs Tuesday. Retrospective of his whole career, how he feels now, obviously 99% unlikely to play again, what he thinks about that, you know, how he misses the game. Really, really good stuff. I strongly encourage everybody to read it. It was fantastic. You know, and you talked about Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving's going to be great. And then Black Friday comes along. Black Friday has always been a college football day. NHL hockey. All day.
Yep.
Couple of big nationally televised games. I can't wait. It's going to take the place of college football. So, like I said, I think there's 2 nationally televised games. There's a bunch of other games on in the afternoon. If you have the package, you tune in. But it's going to be fantastic. So, everybody have a great, great, great Thanksgiving. And we'll see you on the other side.